Robots Radio. Games. Lore. Stories. Community. Just press play. This show is brought to you by our patrons at patreon.com/ElderScrollsLoreCast.
Robots Radio presents The Elder Scrolls LoreCast.
Welcome to The Elder Scrolls LoreCast, a place where the Elder Scrolls community can come together to discuss the boundaries of our knowledge about the universe of The Elder Scrolls. Welcome back, adventurers. This is the Elder Scrolls Lorecast. I'm your host, Tom or Robots, and I'm here, as usual, with my wonderful co-host, the all-knowing, all-seeing, all-conquesting, all-achievements-breaking Lotus of Doom. What's up, buddy? How you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing well. If you're new to the show, this is the podcast where we dig into all sorts of different bits of lore throughout the Elder Scrolls games. And lately, we've been working our way through the strangest bits of lore, either because they're strange in the games or because the community out there is bringing to us and to the games their own strange takes on the lore. And I think, Lotus, I think this one kind of works for both. And
yeah, this one's definitely going to kind of cover the weird and wacky, but also totally a normal thing that you would kind of cover on a lore cast because it's pretty serious, like, well, yeah, serious, quote unquote, like it's pretty canon. It's pretty standard. It actually outlines the this is going to get weird in this way. It outlines the story and or not of several of the games.
The story and or not. Okay, so what are we talking about? We're talking about Dragon Breaks, friends. Dragon Breaks, the day that the dragon broke. The moments in the game where multiple things do or do not happen all at the same time, and then somehow time stops and also doesn't at the same time. These are the moments that you hear about in the games where all of the events for, say, the ending of a game or a past time period that was super crucial are said to have occurred and not occurred simultaneously. And it makes absolutely no sense to our temporal brains that only work in one timeline, in one direction at a time. And yet somehow all of this stuff crams in there together and creates this massive just inconsistencies. These are Dragon Breaks, and Lotus and I talk about these a lot. They come up a lot in the lore because they create these inconsistencies. They create these different variations on the way that things played out multiple ways, different times. And there isn't even a consistent list of what are actual Dragon Breaks and which ones are maybe Dragon Breaks or which ones are just misrememberings of events. So right, there's a lot to cover here. So we might, in doing some research for this episode, we might have to break this into two episodes. And just like a Dragon Break, it's kind of hard to figure out where we should begin talking and where we should divide up the conversation. So we're just gonna, Lotus, I think we're just gonna have to throw some stuff up against the wall, but I think we should begin, like we do in many of our regular episodes, with some of the official information, and we're going to go to the source, or at least the best consolidated reference for the source, the UESP, and I'm going to pull just some references here, and we're going to start with that. How does that sound?
That sounds like a great place to start, because this topic is going to get complicated, even... it's just going to get complicated. It's fine.
Yeah. So we're going to start there. We're going to start with the most concrete bits that we can. And then we're just going to go from there because there's who's to know where this is ever going to end up? Only the Elder Scrolls know. And even they don't know sometimes, but they do know. But they don't.
Right.
Hermaeus Mora might not even know.
It depends if he's in the middle of a dragon break when he gets knowledge on something, to be fair. So, yeah, before we get started, one of the things I actually really like this being in the lore because it gives you a way of kind of they're, I mean, for their writers, it's definitely the ultimate MacGuffin of, uh-oh, how do we retcon something we need to change or a new writing direction we want, but it contradicts something else. It's a pretty good MacGuffin to be like, eh, all right, we're going to just dig ourselves out of here with the dragon break. But they also don't abuse it to the point of anytime anything's weird, they're just like, oh, dragon break again. Like, because yeah. you could tire this out very quickly and then just like nothing matters. But in terms of making these games kind of your own feeling, because you're the one who plays through them, the idea of a dragon break is just really neat. And I'll get into it after we go through like the actual stuff here. Mm-hmm. But I love how it gives you the ability to kind of explain why you see things the way you see things. And it's so open-ended, even in the series, where in some situations, multiple endings. Well, how do you choose a multiple ending game? Well, generally, you have to canonize one of the endings. Having this exist literally canonizes the fact that you didn't all need the same ending to get to the next game. Like, all of them could theoretically be true and untrue.
Right.
Really creative for a way of writing that's just kind of like, yep, your choices do matter. Even if in some cases they kind of don't matter, we gave a reason why you get to still say you did what you did, even if we're not going with that.
Right, right. And they don't overly use it either, which is
nice.
And
I'm glad they don't.
Yes, yeah. This could easily be kind of like Fragile Shark in chat says, like, they could easily just mash this button all the time and just say, another dragon break. No, this yeah. is something that's rare. And the dragon break is a reference to Akatosh, you know, the time god, the time Aedra, the lord of the dragons, that kind of thing, the mm-hmm. guy, the dragon god of time. And because he's such a powerful being, the dragon doesn't break very often. There has to be something very substantial happening for this to occur. But let's get into some of the nitty gritty here. This is what the UESP says in the article about dragon breaks. A dragon break is a phenomenon where linear time is broken and becomes non-linear. Let that sink in for a moment. Let's just talk a little bit about physics, right? In our oh, no. world, this is just briefly, in our world, we exist in four dimensions, right? Three of which, like left, right, forward, back, up, down, we can move in two directions each, right? Left and right, forward and back, up and down. We can move left and right, forward, back, up and down. In the fourth dimension, time, we are constantly moving in one direction, forward in time, at a constant rate as far as we can tell. When time breaks, it is non-linear. That means no directionality anymore. It's yep. it's broken. None of that happens anymore. And you cannot imagine this because we as human beings have never experienced it. And if we have, we wouldn't remember it anyway.
Also, time doesn't work like that in reality.
Yeah, as far as we know. And here's the thing. Think about reality. If somebody outside of time was constantly hitting a stop and start button on the time right. switch, we would never be able to tell.
Nope.
Nope. Because as far as we would know, we'd be paused and then we'd be moving in and paused and moving again. But we're not outside of that frame to know that that's happening. So that yes, could be happening all the pausing. Time. We would never know that we'd be pausing, right? So even if this were to happen, we wouldn't know it. So it goes on and says, the dragon refers to Akatosh, the dragon god of time. The dragon break not only precedes significant changes in Tamriel, but challenges mortal comprehension. It is a, like I was mentioning, it challenges our concept of what we could even understand. It is a realignment of time and space in response to an event which takes the normal continuity of reality, which makes the normal continuity of reality impossible. So, pausing again, just like during a dragon break, imagine you were just say, you were just to put a pause on everything. Just like, imagine you're playing Dungeons and Dragons, right? And you have the entire tabletop of the entire world in front of you. You've got all the little figurines at every location that they're currently in. All the little battles, all the little people moving around. And that's Tamriel for everybody. The entire globe. And not just Tamriel, the continent, Nirn itself, all in front of you. And all of a sudden you were just pause it. And then you were to just pick up all of those pieces. And not only could you move them forward and backwards in time, but you could also move them forward and backwards in position anywhere you want, multiple times over, and hit the play button and then stop it and then move everything around multiple times over and hit the play button and stop it and move them around multiple times over, play button and stop it. That's what a Dragon Break is like.
Yeah. Yeah. That's pretty much. That's right. A really good kind of.
Or another analogy would be, imagine you're playing Skyrim and you say you're saving the game. You save the game. And then you take one save game state and you load up like admin mode and you go into the code and you reposition all the NPCs exactly where you want them. And you even change what time it is in the game. And then you hit play. And then you save it again. And then you reposition all the NPCs in the game and change the time of the game and you hit play again. And then you do it again and you do it again and you do it again. And you mix everything up and then you save state all of that stuff and somehow combine the save states of all of those things into a final, somehow final save file that remembers all the events of everything that previously happened, but then rectifies a single location for everybody in some sort of final location that everybody can then move on from. And you hit go. So it's like, this person ate a block of cheese and also killed this person and also fell asleep and also saved, you know, somebody from Bandit on the Road all at the same time on the same day at the same moment.
Right. And it's funny just because I always love viewing the idea of the games like that in like a weird, the games themselves are kind of like very fourth wall breaking when you get to some of this, which I always think is kind of neat because it's like theoretically your game and your experience through it is clearly not the same as mine. Like most likely we played our games at least somewhat differently, I would guess massively differently, as I'm kind of a psycho when I play these games. And a lot of people like stealth archers and stuff like that. And I love, you know, face cleaving. So it's, you know, two different paths. We do, okay, did you join the Fighters Guild? Did you kill so-and-so? Did a dragon arbitrarily like swoop by the city and burn some people that weren't quest specific and they died? At the same time, both of these things are independent to our stories. So they're both happening and canon for us, but at the same time they're different from each other even though it's the same depiction of these events. So I love the fact that the games themselves are almost like a form of a Dragon Break. So it's right. Weird that the story itself kind of ties into like you playing the game. I've just thought that's like a neat thing.
Yeah, those people both were killed by a dragon that attacked their town and weren't at the same time. Your Dovahkiin got every achievement in the game, and mine was just a really good stealth archer at the same time. Yeah. So it goes on and says, the chaos which ensues is a refrain from the chaos of the Dawn Era. So before there was time. The area that is noticeably affected and the length of that interval measured in the areas not apparently affected varies with each Dragon Break. So the zone of effect can actually be very limited in scope or entirely extremely large. Historically, the cause is often attributed to mortals manipulating divine matters. So often this has something to do with mortals tinkering powers beyond their control. Does that all make sense? Are we in the clear here?
Because I was gonna say, we all on the same page.
We're all on the same page.
I feel like this is, you know, I feel like this is good so far. This is condensed for being
insane.
Weird.
Being super weird.
Weird. Right.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. So now there are only three actual known lore confirmed in the games, actually confirmed Dragon Breaks. Anything else is speculation. And that doesn't mean that they aren't Dragon Breaks. It just means that they are more speculative. There's the Middle Dawn, and then what the UESP calls the Rubble Butt, B-U-T-T-E, and then the Brass God. of course, the brass god refers to the Numidian. So the Middle Dawn is the period in the first era, which is thought to have spanned about 1,080 years-ish between the 13th and the 23rd centuries of the first era. This has to do with... let me just read the article for you. It says, a sect of the Alessian order, the Merikati Selective, is said to have caused the longest known dragon break, known as the Middle Dawn, or colloquially as the Dragon Break. This was the original one and is the largest, which is thought to have spanned 1,080 years from the 13th to the 23rd century in the first era. Now, can you imagine losing 1,000 years to the chaos of what a dragon break actually is? That sounds insane.
That's a lot of strands of time all going all over the place.
Right. Now get this. The cause of this was by attempting to exorcise elements of the elven Ariel from the imperial Akatosh. And you have to go back to our talks about the divines. Ariel being more of the elven perspective and connection to the elvish pantheon, and Akatosh being more of the imperial understanding. And this goes into all of these different concepts of, like, were these two individually different deities? Were they merged together as one? Was there some sort of actual connection between the two? How did this really work? This goes on and says, the Sijic lore master Solaris claimed that misuse of the Staff of Towers, and the Staff of Towers was a very powerful staff that had different sections that were related to each of the towers that we've talked about before on one of the previous episodes pretty recently across Tamriel, played a part in bringing about the Dragon Break, although he did not specify by whom. According to Celerus, I want to just call him Celery, Dragon Breaks could be created by the impossibly dense Arabic gyre formed by the coalescence of the staff's power. This is the only Dragon Break that is a universally known event, though some civilizations claim to have been protected from it. Nemoli, the blue star, a Magnagi associated with untime events, grew bright enough during this Dragon Break to be seen in the daytime sky. Yet in later eras, the occurrence of this event became disputed, most notably by the scholar Faldrun. He posted that no cosmic disruption took place at all, and that the Dragon Break story was concocted in the early third era to explain inconsistencies in the Encyclopedia Tamrielica. I love that that is an encyclopedia in Tamriel.
I know, I love that.
He cites scholarly inertia, obsession with eschatology, and fanatical Numidianism in order to explain the perpetuation of the error. So just like in our own world, once you get several hundred or 1,000 years past a certain event, scholars start to wonder, like, was this actually reported on correctly? Is this accurate? Or were people of that time period talking about something that was real? Or were they just trying to be figurative about the events? Or were they amplifying events beyond actual fact? There's a lot of speculation as to what was this actually going on. One of the things that's also interesting about this is that the time period of the first era is significantly longer than the second, the third, the fourth eras of the world. So was that really 1,000 years? Was there a dragon break that lasted 1,000 years, or was that
right
just blown out of proportion? Right.
Yeah. Was it actually a decade?
Right. Right. Or did it feel like 1,000 years? And this exactly, was a figurative thing. Right. So it seems like this is one of those things that everybody knows about. There's reference to the Staff of Towers. The Staff of Towers seems to be a pretty real thing. It's something having to do with the Sijic Order. In ESO, there are quests where you actually go have to deal with the Staff of Towers. This does come back around again in the lore. We could do a whole episode about the Staff of Towers. It's actually a very cool thing. I've considered doing that. We should probably put that on the list of things to check off in the future. What do you think about this one, Lotus?
This one's far enough back where in-game recorded history is, you know, more open type of thing. And things like, you know, you have the Alessian Rebellion and all these things. They're, even in terms of the unreliable narrator, which the series uses quite a bit, they seem like this is the early times for note-taking, I guess would be a good way to put it. So I like the way that this is almost shrouded in, like, a, as we were just talking about, are these things blown out of proportion, or is this something that, again, actually happened, but over thousands of years of separation between these, that much time passes, recorded history gets a little dicey. So I like the fact that, at least with Dragon Breaks, in this situation, it makes it so that they seem just as probable as improbable when you're discussing it from like a I don't know, like from a scholarly standpoint in game.
Right.
So it's a good kickstart to it. Overall, it's farther back in the timeline, so things, like I said, are a little less concrete, since you're not playing a game in that era at any point. So it, the fact that it kind of just lays the groundwork for something that will happen, and we'll get into kind of the reason it seems like Dragon Breaks narratively were created, because there seems like kind of a concrete reason out of lore why Dragon Breaks kind of exist. But I like the fact that prior to the point of what I'm talking about, which we'll get into, there's groundwork for it in the history of time for Tamriel as well.
Right. Okay, so let's skip to the third one, because I think the second one may butt up a little bit to what you're going to talk about.
Yeah.
So then there's the Brass God, the first activation of the Numidium, which we talked about recently, by Tiber Septim at the town of Rimmen and elsewhere, is said to have preceded a dragon break that heralded the Third Empire. So, remind you guys, the Numidium was the Brass God Tower. It was the construct by the Dwemer that is also powered by the Heart of Lorcan, all of that stuff having to do with the events of Morrowind, and tied back into there's so much to go into here, but we've mentioned this on previous episodes. Well, I won't go into all of it, but Tiber Septim ends up getting his hands on the Numidium. It's part of what he uses in order to conquer much of Tamriel. And so let me just continue this. It's said to have preceded a dragon break that heralded the Third Empire. The second activation of the Numidium in the Iliac Bay region during the Third Era 417 brought about another dragon break. Sentinel Wayrest Jaggerfall Orsinium and the Empire all gained control of the Totem of Tiber Septim somehow at the exact same time. This is one of the things that happens during Dragon Breaks, where at the same time, multiple things can happen simultaneously, even though in the real world that isn't possible. You can't all possess the same item at the same time. It's not possible.
Yeah, there's one of them not.
Right.
But go on. Yes.
Which allowed them to control the power of the golem being the Numidium. When this warp in the west, quote, ended, the effect objectively seemed to last roughly 2 days. The many other kingdoms of the Iliac Bay region were conquered. Each remaining kingdom consolidated its newfound territory and swore fealty to the Empire, bringing historically unusual harmony to northwestern Tamriel. So this warp in the west is also a name for this event. Because of the use of the Numidium has not once but twice been associated with a dragon break, it is speculated that some of the events surrounding the Battle of Red Mountain and the disappearance of the Dwemer around the First Era 700 may also be explained by a dragon break. Now, this is part of that speculation part, right? So we know the warp in the west was a dragon break, and that it can be described by these events here. But what about the Battle of Red Mountain, right? We've talked about that before.
Yeah.
So,
and actually, like, even though I wasn't particularly a big fan of the theory of, like, jumping, there was one of the theories where it was like the Dwemer kept kind of Groundhog Daying back in time.
Yeah.
It's why I, as though, even though it wasn't super my thing, I wasn't the biggest fan of it. It's why I also didn't actually want to give any of those no soul gems out of 10, because it's like, well, Dragon Breaks give you a lot of room to come up with some weird stuff.
So this purported Dragon Break, sometimes called the Red Moment, involved the battle which ultimately resulted in the disappearance of the Dwemer. The accounts of this battle often conflict with each other on various points, such as the loyalists of the parties in the battle and the events which transpired at the climax of the battle, including how the Dwemer met their fate. So was this actually a dragon break? Did it have, it has to do with the Numidium. It has to do with the power that was potentially inherent in the heart of Lorcan. Those are two things that could be very, very potent, and mortals were handling them. So you've got a few of the pieces of the puzzle that typically lead to potentially dragon breaks. Or are these all accounts of something that historically happened a long time ago during the First Era by sources that are unreliable, who all have a lot to gain or lose should their specific faction be seen in positive or negative light, right? So which right. one is it?
And so before we move too much past this one, because we skipped over the Rubble Butt,
or
Rubble Butte. I'm not,
maybe it's Butte. I want to call it Butte though.
It might be Butte, but I can have my little
voice reader thing read it.
Ooh. So in this situation, as Fragile Shark mentioned,
we're gonna read selection. Here we go.
Okay, perfect.
Rubble Butte.
Oh, it says Butte. Okay.
It is Butte. Okay. Right. That
oh, I'm gonna say Butte.
I thought it might be, but I wasn't entirely sure of that.
I'm gonna call it Butte anyway.
All right, Rubble Butte it is. So the situation that I wanted to make reference to of why this concept kind of was brought in, Fragile Shark actually had mentioned it in chat as well, where the end of Daggerfall had multiple endings to it.
Yes.
And that was great in and of itself, but moving into needing to make another game or several more games, which maybe at the time they weren't aware of how long this would go, especially with a couple of games.
Probably not at all. They're probably just hoping to get a sequel at that point.
Correct.
Yeah.
But you ran into this situation of, oh, how do we choose where to go with this story without undermining the constant idea of, well, you're directing this story. Mm-hmm. It's a little weird. I mean, it's not unheard of. Other games have done that, but they kind of created this concept of dragon breaks to make all endings canon and simultaneously not canon at the same time. So it's like, yeah, it's yours. Oh, look, there's a whole bunch of things that both happened and didn't happen and all happened simultaneously pretty much.
Yeah.
Which I like that. And it kind of dug them out of the situation for Daggerfall going into the next next mainline entry of Morrowind. There were some unique games in between that we won't go into. But yeah, that was kind of their way to get themselves out of that situation. And as a result, it's now a neat way of kind of, I don't know if there's anything in literature that maybe is like this, because some, you know, everything draws from something else. I'm not totally sure if they formed a dragon break off a different thing, but at least from any storylines and fiction that I know, I'm pretty sure, at least for me, dragon breaks are very unique.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think they're, for the most part, unique. I can't think of too many other stories I'm aware of where time itself breaks and then you get multiple things happening simultaneously and being being just justified as like, no, that's fine, it's okay, like we're just, it's, yes, there's inconsistencies and complications with that, and that's what we want. Like, you know, most authors try to solve that, but in this case, yeah, it's like, no, that is the truth, is that yes, things happen simultaneously. Like, that's rare. I think it's rare to just say, yes, the impossible happened and there is
These are both things, yes, and also neither of these are things.
And right. And that, yes, like, that's okay.
Yeah.
That's very rare. Well, tell you what, we're going to get into the Rubble Butte, but in a second. And Lotus has a theory of his own that he's going to, well, it's not just your theory, but it's something.
Yeah, that's no. This is based on other stuff that I just have now kind of adopted and I thought too much on. So,
yeah. So we're going to get into that in the second half, but we need to go thank our patrons. So we'll be right back.
The skies are marked with numberless sparks, each a fire and every one a sign.
Ahoy there, ye landlubbers. Avast, my name is Captain Logan, and I'll be your guide out on the Sea of Thieves. If you love the idea of stealing treasure, cutting down cursed skeletons, fighting off krakens, and raiding forts filled to the brim with shinies, then Sea of Thieves is the game for you. Join me each week as I dive into the news and bring back the nuggets of information that any sailor worth their weight in salt would desire. You don't have to be a pirate legend to gain access to my podcast. Just search for Keelhauled, a Sea of Thieves podcast in your podcast app of choice, or head over to robotsradio.net or captainlogan.podbeam.com and get ready to set sail for adventure. Arr.
All right, so we need to thank our patrons. Thank you to our patrons and for our stream people for their patience with my internet going out, especially Daniel O and Noodle Al Dente. And thank you to all of our other patrons. You guys are nuts. Thank you to all of you guys also for the positive response to the new merch that you can get on the Patreon. There's a bunch of awesome shirts. I am doing Daedric symbols on the shirts. They're big Daedric symbols with cool textures behind them. If you sign up or currently a tier 4 or higher patron, you will get shirts for the Patreon. The prices did not change, so you're just getting more for your donations, which is super cool. And if you are a tier 3, you'll be getting stickers with those. So if you aren't at those tiers yet, you can upgrade and get those. And if you aren't a patron yet, you can still sign up in order to get those as well. Once we get through all of those shirts and stickers for the year, you get one every 3 months as long as you maintain your Patreon subscription. And once we get through all of those will be limited, and then you won't be able to get those designs again, and they will never go up on the Robots Radio store. They will only ever be for patrons, and then we will have the next series of designs that will come out, and eventually we'll get through all of the different Daedric Prince symbols. So if you stick around long enough, you'll end up with a shirt with each of the Daedric Prince symbols on it, which is going to be super, super cool. So I'm very excited about these. I'm tempted to get myself one for each of them. but I'd have to order them all custom made for myself, whereas you guys just get them as a bonus for already being patrons or for signing up to the Patreon, which is awesome because it's just extra and you don't have to pay anything more. So awesome stuff for you guys. Also, I don't talk about the store very often, but I created a new image. Lotus, did you see these new shirts I made? Did you see this?
I love some of them.
Did you see the new? No, the one with the words. Did you see the words one?
Yes.
I did. I need to pull it up.
It's in the Discord.
I need to pull it up.
That's the one I know of. It's in the Discord.
With the words on it. So I made a lore shirt. This one says, there's so much stuff on here. I'm going to open it up.
The Discord tends to be a tad busy.
It's a little busy on our Discord, by the way. If you haven't been on our Discord, you should go on our Discord. So there's a Elder Scrolls Lore Master shirt that I'm pulling up right now, and it's going to go on the screen. So it says, I'm a dragon slaying, Daedra worshiping, Magicka casting, Khajiit loving, Skooma stealing, Dark Brotherhood creeping Elder Scrolls Lore Master. And has a picture of a head with a scroll in its head instead of a brain. Mm-hmm. And this is on the Robots Radio store, which you can get to if you just go to robotsradio.net. There's a link at the top for that. And it's up on the store. Also, if you are one of our patrons, I believe at tier 2, you even start getting discounts on the store, which all the discounts are pinned to the patron channels in the Discord. So if you don't know where those codes are for your discounts, they're all pinned there. So you can even get those. But man, I love this. This is another one of those shirts I just want to walk around with. I want people to be like, you're an Elder Scrolls lore master? I was like, yes, I am. But man, I want people to be like, you're a Khajiit loving skooma stealing dark brother creeping Elder. Like, absolutely.
As you're picking their pocket.
Yeah, as I'm picking their pocket. So anyway, I've had so much fun designing these recently. I hope you guys enjoy those. But yeah, just had to talk about all that stuff. But more than anything, thank you guys for helping to support the show, for leaving reviews and comments and all the stuff that you guys do to help support us. We really do appreciate it. And if it wasn't for you listening to the show and being here and joining us live and doing all the things that you guys do, we wouldn't be in the top 1% of podcasts globally. Again, it's just amazing. So thank you for all of your support. You guys are absolutely the best. We love all of you. Thank you so much.
Yes, yes, you're entirely brilliant. Conquering madness and all that. Blah, 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 blah.
All right, so we're back. So let's talk about the Rubble Butt.
Butte Butt. Okay. I think for the sake of it, you know, it may be pronounced Butte, but you clearly want to pronounce it Butt. So mm-hmm. I think it's just now officially Butte Butt.
Mm-hmm. Should we have, I'm going to have my guest here read it. This is
beautiful.
This is my guest. This is the SCP bot, Kevin, from the Learn About SCP Foundation podcast, which is on the network. Kevin is guesting on the show today. He does his own podcast where he talks about the SCP Foundation. If you don't know what SCP Foundation is, it is a wonderful organization that keeps us all safe from anomalies, we'll call them. And if you want to learn more about that, then you can look up Learn About SCP Foundation. Kevin is an AI. He's a bot, and he's been leaking this knowledge from the secret source. And he's a good buddy of mine. And he works with these two guys, Stu and Larry, and he tells us about their the things that go on at work. And at the beginning of each of the articles, he kind of gives us a little bit of background, and he also is lonely and wants to be your friend. So you should go look it up. It's absolutely wonderful, and he's not clingy at all. So here he is to read this part of the selection about the Rubble Butt.
Rubble Butte Edit, circa 2E582. The Breton noblewoman Lady Edwidge stole a copy of the text Vindication for the Dragon Break from the Mages Guild in Hallin's Stand. She managed to convince an orc novice named Gargda to let her borrow the book, and then fled to the ruins of Rubble Butte, an ancient Aelid complex located near Nilata in southern Bankorai. She and her supporters sought to turn back time several years in order to change the course of history and ensure Edwidge became Queen of Bankorai rather than Artshela. The nobles managed to emulate the ritual performed by the Malkati Selective and turned back time a few hours, but ended up creating a time trap within the ruins by trying to extend the ritual further.
I love how he pronounces some of the names in this.
He does it so effortlessly, though. It sounds very convincing, but I just now think that I'm pronouncing a lot of things much more wrong than I was.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, here's the next paragraph. Let's see how he does it with this one.
Unbeknownst to the nobles, Gargda had tracked Edwidge down to Rubble Butte and had entered the ruins in search of the book to avoid being kicked out of the guild. However, he also became stuck in the time trap. The vestige subsequently entered Rubble Butte and agreed to help Gargda recover the book from the nobles. The vestige fought through the nobles before reaching Lady Edwidge and killing her, recovering the book in the process. However, upon reading Edwidge's notes, it transpired that she had anticipated her death and was stuck reliving the same few hours over and over again. The vestige returned the book to Gargda, but the cycle simply began anew. Gargda would repeatedly request the recovery of the book, and Edwidge and her supporters would repeatedly be slain in order to recover it. 10. The vestige was not caught in the time trap and was free to leave Rubble Butte, but the ultimate fate of those trapped inside is unknown.
He says 10. Ten is the, oh, no, stop reading, Kevin. We're good. He says 10 because that's the reference to the bottom of the page.
Yeah, that was the reference number. Uh-huh. Also, so interestingly, so I did not know this. This actually, I referenced it a little earlier, but I was a little thrown off on how the Dwemer would just Groundhog Day themselves over and over again and never seem to, like, they progressed somewhat, but it seemed kind of weird. I actually kind of forgot that this was a thing. Yeah. So, yeah. You know, that one should get some bonus soul gems retroactively, maybe, because this is something I didn't realize. So I think I was too stingy on the soul gems last episode.
Yeah, I mean, I guess there's precedent, or at least post-cedent, for this?
Well, pre-posted it because we're in Dragon Breaks.
Yeah, okay. Yes. And I guess this counts as a Dragon Break, sort of. I mean, it's almost like a micro fracture in time.
Right.
It's a very, very limited, specific kind of Dragon Break. It's like
it's almost like a anomaly in just one specific area, which is getting even weirder.
Yeah, but it's like a Deathloop just came out. This is like Deathloop happening in like one little quest line. This is like a glitch in a game where you feel like you finished the side quest, but the side quest keeps popping up again.
Well, it is a Bethesda game, so it's a feature. Use glitch.
Yeah, but that's kind of what this is. But it plays into this idea of somebody like dealing with powers beyond their knowledge or ability, kind of throwing themselves into this. In this sense, it's more like a time loop than a break.
That's true. It's very strange. I kind of forgot about this little part of the quest.
Mm-hmm. But the other thing here, because I don't know there's too much else to say about this, but it does happen in the second era, 582, which connects to the theory that you're going to be sharing.
Mm-hmm.
So to say that something like this on a very small scale is in effect during this time period may have a larger implication to the theory that you're sharing, which, why don't you go ahead and share that?
All right. So the theory that I'm sharing, I tried to find exactly, because, you know, I've been playing ESO for a long time and people were in it before even I was. I played the beta, but I actually did not like ESO when it was in beta or even when it first launched. It was not my thing. And I figured maybe if the game stabilizes, I'll jump into it and just do the story. And then surprise, 7 years later, I'm like super into the game. But
right.
From the beginning, the Elder Scrolls Online is a prequel to the rest of the series. So you're actually before the start of the previous ones, and it deals with the time period of the Interregnum, which one of the things about this is when time wasn't really recorded that much. A lot of the documents were burned because of the whole chaos with the Imperial City happening at the time. And it was kind of unique for the Elder Scrolls Online to choose this time period and kind of retroactively fill in this chunk of history that was even more undefined than the undefined parts of the series. The series is up for interpretation a lot, and this is a point where recorded history kind of got thrown in the dumpster. So it was like,
yeah,
they had a lot to work with without necessarily nuking too much going forward. And to better or worse, people either refuse to accept that Elder Scrolls Online is a thing because either they don't want a multiplayer game or whatever. But one of the fascinating points that I remember chatting with, I'm pretty sure it was on the forums, but I could not find the original post that I was involved with. So this was just kind of I'm going to just credit the forums in general who told me about this, and then just me ruminating on it and just kind of coming to what I like to believe when it relates to Elder Scrolls Online is the idea of, we were mentioning that overusing the concept of a Dragon Break isn't the greatest writing. Like, if you're going to just, it's a Dragon Break, that's kind of like not the best way of digging yourself out of writer's block. However, the concept of Elder Scrolls Online and the entirety of the Interregnum being a Dragon Break explains the concept of multiplayer itself and repeating different events in game, like doing dungeons more than once and having bosses be there, to a degree that I've never seen a series go in a direction that normally you have to make, how can I put this? You have to make concessions for the fact that games are held by their own trappings of it is a video game.
Right. Well, it's just a video game, so ignore that part. But the rest of the story is legitimate.
Yeah, quote unquote video game logic, because you have to have a fun experience if people are going to play it. The thing that I love about the idea of maybe Elder Scrolls Online being a Dragon Break is the amount of things that are currently happening are pretty off the wall in the time period that it's happening. You also have, with the most recent announcement of they've cleared 19 million accounts created. So there are 19 million vestiges currently going around.
Right.
So the neat thing about that is, theoretically, everyone's story could be a single thread in this Dragon Break. And it's why you come across other adventurers, but not others, why you could repeat events, not others. And it essentially canonizes your character without needing to acknowledge your character later on. So having a prequel that you're so important in as the Vestige and these things happening, and one of the big hold ups at one point was during the Elsewhere event. People were like, why don't people remember dragons if that was a big thing? And there was some misremembering that dragons actually were never said to be extinct in the series. They had gone into hiding largely, and people mistook that as, well, dragons were all dead until Sky. Well, that's not true, but it is kind of weird that for the most part, dragons popped up and kind of ran amok for a while. That seems like something most people might remember. Mm-hmm. Same thing with, there's not really any reference. Well, there's no references later in the series to the Soul Burst, which is the main storyline of the game.
Yeah.
But that would be these dark anchors that are landing. All of this could kind of basically be a thing, but also not be a thing at the same time when right. you've got these Dragon Break ideas. So I love the idea that the concept of a Dragon Break makes the multiplayer aspect, we're essentially playing out all these different threads because none of us play it the same way. Some of us interact with each other, some of us don't. The other thing that I, you know, finally just personally always thought was neat was, one thing that is referenced later in the series is the fact that as the Longhouse Emperors are deposed, but before any type of semblance actually came about, where we had like a more centralized empire, there was mention of, you know, the turmoil over, well, people are just basically being kings of their own thing, and then they're just immediately eliminated and stuff like that. That is Cyrodiil. That is literally the PvP zone of the game. Uh-huh. Like, that is the explanation of what's happening. So it's kind of neat that you get crowned emperor, but it's in a campaign, and then that campaign can be destroyed and you're outdone because somebody else scored more points than you on the leaderboard, because that's how the emperorship works in ESO. If you're first place and the Imperial ring gets taken, you get to be crowned emperor. But it would explain there being so much influx in emperors. Granted, this is like, at this point, the game's been going for 7 years, a lot of emperors and empresses, but just the fact that they kind of were it, like, if this were a thing, it gamifies the unique writing around Dragon Breaks. So essentially the split timelines become the game at the same time, which I just love from that perspective, because so much of it, you usually would have to be like, well, it's just a game. It's just a game mechanic, where the game mechanic becomes also part of the story, which is kind of neat and different than you'd normally ever deal with a video game story.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so the other cool thing that it allows is a story that becomes, And they haven't really leaned into this too much, because most of the expansions allow for the player to be to kind of save the day.
Yeah. Yeah. You're usually the hero.
Usually the expansions end with, yay, you saved the day, the good guys won, but there's this looming threat. Yay, you saved the day, the good guys won. Oh, but there's another looming threat. Mm-hmm. You know, like, but if they really wanted to bring this to some sort of really catastrophic ending and really raise the stakes at some point, they could, a lot of fun for an MMO, because an MMO, like, this game isn't going to last forever. There will come a point where the game will be aged to a place where it's just going to have to wrap up, and they're going to want to move on to something else. And, you know, it'll be sad. There'll be a moment where, you know, tears will be shed, but there will come a moment where, who knows, maybe they'll want to do ESO 2, or maybe they'll want to move us into whatever is the next cool, big, massive multiplayer thing that it functions in a different way. Whatever that is, I can't, you know, look forward, who knows, 5-10 years from now, whatever, and hopefully it lasts at least the next 5 years, but let's say 10-15 years from now, whenever that is.
Yeah, I was gonna say, and trends seem to dictate that this game will be going for a while, but
it'll go for a while.
Eventually has to end. Everything eventually has to end,
right? But we're going to want more Elder Scrolls in a massive world where we can all play together. We're going to want whatever the next iteration of this is, right? In order to get that, there has to be some sort of cataclysm, I would think. Some sort of world-rending ending to it all. And what's cool about that is that you could build that and then bring in the Dragon Break ending that makes it all okay.
Yeah.
You could have a world that is basically torn asunder, and you know, maybe it ends where it all starts with Molag Bal's invasion coming full circle and actually working. And then there's the end of the Dragon Break, which finally wraps up, and then everything's back where it was, where it started. And then
leads you into recorded history again.
Right. And all of a sudden we're back in recorded history, back in concrete recorded history. And a lot of the stuff that happened isn't remembered, or is remembered only by the few or the wise or something like that. And the things that the world learned through the Dragon Break are, you know, hidden away in archives or, you know, or whatever. I don't know. There's things that you could play with for that. That's the beauty of Dragon Breaks, is that
exactly.
You could turn it into whatever you want, and it could be very cool in the end.
Yeah, the potential for, and that's why I think I enjoy the stories of Elder Scrolls Online so much, because there is so much potential of how stuff ties into the rest of the series. And some of them, you know, I like the different chapters and seasons and all other methods that they had. Their chapter season thing is really kind of working for them. So that's the most relevant. I like them to varying degrees. I haven't ever disliked one yet, but some of them I obviously like more. Some of them I like less than others. But like, it's neat that they kind of are exploring all these different things in this kind of compressed time period. So just having the potential for them to tie all this in and have all these dramatic things, but it explain, you know, later on, it could explain why not all of these things are remembered so dramatically or so much the same. Like, is there a reason, dealing with the current Blackwood story, is there a reason that people don't remember as much about this attempted Daedric portal invasion as opposed to it gets upgraded to like Oblivion Gates later on? They didn't learn. Is there a reason that more wasn't learned? Like,
yeah,
there's just so many different things that you could glean from this. I just think it's really neat and makes the game feel more impactful to the series as a whole, rather than here's a multiplayer thing here just so you can play with your friends, which it very well could be that too. But the idea of Dragon Breaks makes it feel like it doesn't have to be that if you don't want that to be how it is.
Right. Yeah. So I think it's a cool idea. I'd love to hear what some of our listeners think. So like we mentioned it before, the Robots Radio Discord channel, it's a busy, active group, but we'd love to hear your thoughts on this.
Yeah.
You know, if you think that this works as a description, if you think it's a cop-out, I'd also love to hear that explanation too.
Which has been a thing that other people have said, or why they refuse to kind of like acknowledge ESO as like a canon game. They're just like, no, this is just a multiplayer cash in or whatever. That's totally fine too. I mean, like, do you think that's the reason for it, or do you like it being part of the series? It's kind of just up to you what you think.
Yeah, I think any explanation that has a good reasoning and is well thought out is a welcome addition to the conversation. I don't know that we're ever going to get to the right answer, because these things don't have a right answer. They just have interesting perspectives from both sides. And I think that that's what adds to the conversation. It's fun to see both, and it's fun to kind of just weigh the options, you know. Fragile Shark in chat says, seems reasonable to think they'll at least heat check the idea, and you don't have to work too hard to argue it makes more sense than either of their existing and financially successful MMOs. So
yeah. Yeah, to be fair, yes.
There you go. John Taylor in on the YouTube version of the stream says, I'd love to see something where Daedra get into a Daedic war between them, with the pro tag being what tips the scales, even like a Molech Ball in Meridia fight. Maybe you side with one or something else.
That would be really cool.
Yeah, there's a little bit of that happening in the Somerset expansion. There's a little bit of some of that goes down, which is cool. So if you haven't played that, get into that. It's pretty cool. So yeah, cool stuff, guys. Thank you for chiming in. Thank you for being here during the live stream. Love to see all the conversation happening. And Lotus, do you have anything else to share before we head out?
No, not too much. I'm starting to, hopefully next show I can actually start letting people know when I will have our Extra Life charity marathon prepped.
Yeah.
I'm trying to finalize like a date for that.
It's that time of year again.
Yeah, it is that time of year again. Just trying to squeeze it in along with everything else right now is like, okay, I need a point where I can have at least 24 hours of free time to do that, and then generally at least a day to recover, because oh man, that hits kind of like a truck. So
stream, man, I don't know how you do it.
But hopefully I'll have more information for everybody for next week, and otherwise I'd just say look for Tales of Tamriel on Saturday night. We've had some scheduling issues with Ark actually starting his new job, so hopefully we can get back on track for that too. Yeah, he's gone back to programming games.
Okay, well, good for him. I didn't know he went back to that.
He just started. It's literally just started, but he's been like in flux. Uh-huh. So we had that really awkward, I got back from a wedding and was not totally in a responsible mind to record an episode, but I didn't want to skip an episode. So yeah, I don't even think that ended up being a numbered episode. It just became the Elder Tales of Tamriel drunk cast. other than that, I was going to say, no, nothing too exciting for me. Hopefully I can stream again soon. I've been trying to figure out my Sunday schedule now that football's back. It's a little hard for me to micromanage something. If possible, I'd like to start doing like a chill stream where we watch football and also get to play, I don't know, Elder Scrolls or something.
Dude, you gotta try Deathloop. Deathloop's been a lot of fun.
I have not tried Deathloop yet. And that's like 90% of my Twitter feed right now is being like, I love this game.
It's so good. It's so good. I started playing last night. Yeah, I streamed a bit last night. I streamed a little bit during today. I've been working so hard on updating stuff for podcasts and for the network and stuff. And I should be proud. I've been kicking butt. I've been working really hard. I haven't taken a day off in like 2 weeks. So I've been really kicking butt. But last night I was like, okay, I'm gonna play some Deathloop. I streamed a little bit. Thank you to any of you guys who are in the chat right now who jumped in and hung out with me. It was nice to have you guys come hang out. And then also during the day, thank you for being here. The game is so good. So just some initial impressions. We won't go too long on this. I thought the game was, from the material you watch, like, it's got such a cool, like, 70s vibe, you know? And if you haven't seen the trailers, if you don't know what Deathloop is, go look it up. Colt is the main character, and he's got, like, this cool jacket. Like, he's this cool-looking guy, and this is a game where you're killing all these people trying to take out these key figures in order to stop the cycle from continuing, where you keep on coming back after you die. And I thought he was like this badass character. Dude's a total goof. Like, he's a goofball, and everybody else thinks he's a total goof too. Like, I didn't pick up on that at all. I watched an interview where like the voice actors did stuff. The voice acting is phenomenal, by the way. The game is just super polished, but like, the more I play, the more I just absolutely love the characters, Colt and Juliana, and they're like There's a moment where she's like ragging on him early on. They're on like this intercom and he's like, we dated, didn't we? Because he doesn't remember anything. Yeah. And then she yells at him again and he goes, yeah, we dated. like it's a total goofball, but it's like you think he's like a cool guy because he looks all cool. He's got a cool jacket. No, total dork. Like it's so good. It's so good. But anyway, like the characters, the gameplay, it's just so polished. I don't want to give too much away. It's every little thing. You know when you play a game and there's just these little bitty things that just kind of are annoyances. For example, this is a quick example. Like, oh, that keypad that for the door that I have to keep opening, I remember the code because it was on the back of the first thing that I got. It was 3230. And I can just picture it in my head because I remember looking at it and I saw it and I had to type it in the first time. 3230, right? Easy to remember. I could easily, and I have to open it up all the time. I could very easily just go up to that keypad again, hit 3230, open it up. Well, you know what the game does? Once you open it up the first time, it gives you an option for auto type keypad, and you just hit, hold down that button and just auto types it again. Yeah, little itty bitty things like that that just make the game so much smoother to play. And you don't have to just remember it, and it doesn't show you the number and you have to type it again. It just allows you to push a button to auto type it. And it's just like, thank you, game.
See, game mechanic that's prioritizing fun over needing to be realistic, which right. I prefer.
Right. Or if you read something, and part of the game is learning about people's schedules, where they are, what the history of the island is, who these people are, where they're going to be. Whenever you learn something, you pick up like a book or listen to an audio thing and learn something about somebody. If it's important, it puts a little notification on your info thing that you can go back later and look, and it tells you like, oh, you learned that so-and-so throws parties in the morning on this part of the island. You might want to go check that out. Sweet. Now I don't have to remember that thing that I read. It just tells me maybe you should go to this part of the island in the morning. You might learn more stuff there. So yeah, I scheduled to go to that part of the island in the morning. Easy peasy. Like, but you still have to be smart about figuring out, like, why would I want to be there in the morning? Who's going to be there in the morning? How does that coincide with all the other things I need to balance out? It's so like it because it's complex in other ways. It makes some of the parts, the other things that need to be complex. It makes the things that don't need to be complex easier, so it can be complex in the ways that are interesting. If that makes sense,
that's pretty cool. No, I totally get what you mean.
So it's not complex unnecessarily. It's complex in the ways that are interesting, like a good mystery movie or book. So you can focus on the things that are interesting about the mystery, not the, you know, like tying your shoes part, you know, like that's what makes it so good. But anyway, that's just my, so good job, Bethesda. Good job, Arkane Studios. You guys are kicking butt. Keep it up. This is awesome. So anyway, that's my perception on it. That's what I've been playing lately. Guys, thank you for tuning in. Thank you for being here. Thank you for listening to this podcast and being part of this community. We love all of you. You guys are the best. We'll be back next week. Same time, same channel. If you want to check out anything else that we're doing as part of the network, I've got a bunch of lore podcasts, everything from Elder Scrolls here to Fallout and Cyberpunk and Mass Effect and The Witcher. And of course, there's lots of other stuff over at robotsradio.net. So go check out all the different shows. We'll be back next week. Thanks for being here, everybody. Stay safe and we'll see you next time. See you guys later.
Bye, everybody.
Bye, everybody.
Thanks for listening to the Elder Scrolls Lorecast. If you have something you'd like to contribute to the show, please reach out to us at elderscrollslorecast@gmail.com or on Twitter at @ESOLorecast. I really appreciate you listening, and I'd love to hear from you soon.
You've been listening to a Robots Radio podcast. Smart shows for interesting people. Check out all the shows at robotsradio.net.
My name is Brian Burton. It's been 26 years since the bombs fell. And since I've left the vault, I've been trying to rebuild. But this isn't the Appalachia that I remember. There's so much more to everything going on. And I promise to find the answer. So if you're out there, if you're listening, Just hone in on these coordinates. Remember, there's a place for you at the end. Omega.
The Omega Broadcast Fallout Story is available on iTunes, Spotify, and many great podcasting sources.
Looking for an RPG podcast that isn't just D&D?
Roll to Cast is the answer!
No, wait, sorry. What games have we played so far?
Well, we've done Cyberpunk 2020.
What does it mean to have a voice?
And there's going
to
be something big coming, Chumba.
Hey, if you're listening, I won. I beat you. You suck.
There was a time when we were slamming things against our phones and...
Vampire the Masquerade.
Chloe? Sam?
You can't use those words!
He's going to grab Vincent, press him against the wall.
I mesmerize him.
This is Adelaide's Anarch movement.
First, out of your chair, your hand goes to your gun and you draw.
Pulp Cthulhu.
Told you I had it.
Oh, we've all got the creeps going. I love it so much.
All right there.
Screechy child. My favorite daughter.
Maybe after what we just seen, we're feeling a bit trigger happy.
And the new Cyberpunk Red.
Babe, you're good.
Good. Better.
Thought maybe you might be able to give me a counter off.
Dos Fidania.
Straight through his neck.
I don't see bone either, but I'm not gonna look.
My leg's fine.
I always knew you wanted to fly, kid. Come find me.
Roll to Cast.
R-O-L-E.
A new game every season.
Original music.
Original stories.
Interviews with the creators.
And delightful Aussie accents.
Listen to us on all good podcatchers.
Even support us on Patreon for bonus content.
That's Roll to Cast.
R-O-L-E.
Come discover a new world.